He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, to your favorite day of the week. It is The Hook. We are recording on a Friday. It is Pete and me. We do these things as often as we can. Recently, we haven't been able to because Pete could barely speak. So I'm glad that, Pete, your voice is working again. I've been, obviously, since you came over to Odyssey and since I'm kind of operating in the capacity that I am with them, I've been listening to a lot more of your shows. And so, like, listening to your voice just kind of get gradually better and better and better over the week, I was like, oh, thank God he's all right. How you holding up, bud?
I'm doing okay, man. Thank you for asking. Yeah, it's funny. It's one thing where it's like, oh, I can do my job from anywhere so long as I have my voice. And it's like, oh. It's one of those, like, reality check type moments where it's like, don't take anything for granted. But so I'll be coughing, but I'll be muting the mic and all that. I'm still not all the way better, but hanging in there, man. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. It's that frantic day before travel in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's, you know, I'm a procrastinator when it comes to my packing. And, you know, I bought this new like case for the mic that I haven't even tested that I'm just realizing right now. So fingers crossed, I guess. But no, I want to dive into the show because Pete, you and I are almost always on the same side of an issue, almost always, especially when it comes to the Lakers. Cause like for the most part, I think we both have pretty rational thoughts on the Lakers. On this occasion though, based on listening to your guys' shows, recently, I think you and I are diametrically opposed on this one. And it's about the Giannis plan or the Jokic plan or the 2026-2027 plan. And my stance is I would prefer to maximize the opportunity that the Lakers definitely have in front of them right now. I think your stance, and I don't want to speak for you, so at any point tell me to shut up here, but your stance is more planning for the Luka, you know, window and trying to maximize the Luka window from here on out, starting with the, you know, summer of 2026, potentially, or 27, with pursuing Giannis and positioning the Lakers for the pursuit of Giannis. Are we good so far?
Yeah, I would love for the Lakers to be able to compete this year. I just don't believe in the LeBron-Luka combo. Like, Lakers got smoked in the first round last year, and I just didn't see a path to adding enough talent to win four more rounds of playoff basketball than they won last year. So I just think it's the rational thing to do is to build toward the next championship that you can win. And so I just think it probably starts from a place that I don't believe in this combo perhaps as much as you do.
Well, that's where it's interesting because I actually see that stance. And before they got Ayton, I think I would have agreed that, like, I just didn't see the path to a starting caliber center who would elevate this group in that way. And then once they got Ayton, I was like, huh, that path, which before was like that high wire that people cross over the Grand Canyon, that path is now like scaling the Grand Canyon. And actually, like, it's still a lot of work, but you could still, there's a path that I think one can feasibly walk across.
How much do you factor in the loss of DFS? Because we didn't just add Ayton.
Yeah, no. I think that's fair. I think my problem with Ayton or with DFS is, like, I didn't think he was very good in the playoffs. So, like, if we're analyzing the Lakers from the standpoint of they got their asses kicked in the first round, and I thought Dorian was part of the problem, then swapping him out for somebody who I think might handle that situation better or just fit better with the Lakers, I think does help quite a bit. I don't know if I'm making too big a deal out of this, I do this from time to time. But when Dorian said after game one that like he let the lack of touches get to him, I was like, ouch.
I remember that pissing you off. Yeah.
I was just, what in what world are you going to get ISO touches, Dorian? You're the thing, you're a veteran. So you should be self-aware enough to know that. And on top of that, like the thing you should bring to the table is that like hard hat and pack lunch mentality where it's like the thing that I should be able to reliably or consistently rely upon is Dorian not having, like not worrying about Dorian's touches and shots and stuff like that. So once he said that, I was kind of sort of out on him. Now to be absolutely clear, I think the Lakers still kind of screwed up that situation on their way out. That's well, established on the show, but yeah, I don't know. I don't think losing Dorian, the player, like I think Ayton is a much larger addition than the Dorian subtraction.
I agree to an extent, but again, we're talking about winning four more rounds of the playoffs than the Lakers actually did. Like, if you want to argue the Lakers are marginally better because they actually added a starting caliber center and they took away from a position where they have a bit of redundancy at the power forward spot. Only thing I'd add is that Lakers don't have much in the way of defensive talent now with Dorian going. Like, I would say that to get from the Lakers to where they are to being kind of on the outskirts of contention is they need a backcourt player that we would consider to be the best backcourt defender on the team. That's a two-way player. I'm putting Vando to the side here. And a frontcourt player that fits the same description, right? Who's the best frontcourt defender that we have. And that's a lot of player to be able to acquire between now and then. And so this whole, in the context of the so-called Giannis plan, how much do you take from the future and your capacity to either get Giannis or your plan B, plan C versus throwing future assets toward now?
Yeah, I wouldn't move the first round pick that they have, for example. Like, I think that's a fair compromise. I think you want to have that. Like, there's nobody on the market right now. I know Wiggins is the person that or the player that a lot of people kind of have their eyes on. I wouldn't trade a first rounder for Wiggins with a $30 million player option if I'm sending out Rui too. But yeah, the thing with Ayton, and it's like any starting caliber big that they could have added, I just think last year was so impossible to analyze how serious the Lakers were because Jackson Hayes was their starting center. And like my math from that point, if that's the starting point, my math on evaluating that team and what they actually can be moving forward as soon as the season is completely thrown off, because that was an unprecedented thin starting or center rotation in an era, by the way, where everybody's getting super duper big, you know? So like,
but now we're okay because we have DeAndre Ayton.
No, I don't think they're okay. I hated the Hayes signing. I wish they would have gotten somebody who, you know, I know there's a lot of talk of like, do they get Ayton if they don't bring in Hayes? I don't necessarily believe all of that, but I would have preferred, like, I like that guy Achiuwa from New York. I just would have preferred a little bit more creativity there than bringing back the guy that we saw couldn't even play in the playoffs last year.
I think
they're okay. I think they need to trade for another center.
I do too. I think ideally Jackson would be your third string type of guy. I think that what they're trying to do is be as efficient with the money as possible with respect to Hayes, and that they had his early bird rights and they could re-sign him. So like getting Achiuwa or somebody like that, for example, you dip into that remaining BAE money, right? That I think is earmarked for ideally a buyout guy, right? I think there are a domino or two left to fall in the Lakers offseason that they could sign Hayes and at least have a guy who can help you get through the regular season at the very least and still have a little bit of money left over for a buyout, et cetera.
I think once Portland realizes they aren't going to be good this year, Williams becomes a lot more available. And like, if you trade for Williams during the season, you know, at least fairly soon in the season, I think you could attach that to the tail end of the offseason and say that was a pretty fine offseason. But same for Thybul. Like for right now, it's funny. Portland extended Joe Cronin and Chauncey Billups based off of like 2 months of okay play mm-hmm. compared to like what they've been recently. So I think they're going to see if they can ride that momentum forward, but I think they're going to learn pretty quickly that, okay, yeah, when everybody is trying, the West is very different than, you know, in March of last year. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I want to go back really quick, backtrack a little bit to the Luka LeBron tandem. Because again, I don't know that I am fully able to analyze what they're capable of based on last year's playoffs, because they left so much tactical meat on the bone by basically never coexisting in a set or running anything at all together. And if now, because of the situation that the Lakers and LeBron find themselves in right now, which I don't think is very healthy, maybe the point to make is that, you know, as that might remain the case, you know, maybe he and Luka maybe ever or never do get on the same page, or there is no getting on the same page going into the season. And like, okay, I'm willing to factor that into the analysis too. But if LeBron is on the roster on opening day, and if he and Luka, let alone he, Luka and Austin, do more stuff offensively together, I think that raises the Lakers' bar by quite a bit. So, and by the way, you know, yeah, they got their asses kicked by Minnesota. I think that was the worst matchup that they could have drawn, or one of the worst matchups that they could have drawn, given that they entered the postseason with just Jackson Hayes as 7-footers who would touch the floor. And Minnesota was just so big. But yeah, I and also I think in this era of parity, I don't think you need to be as good as you maybe needed to be prior. You don't think the Lakers need to take as huge a leap in this offseason as they would in years prior. Like OKC is supposed to be this juggernaut, and they just spent $700 or almost $800 million in combined salaries over the course of those contracts to solidify their core moving forward. And I thought they were pretty beatable. Denver took them to 7 games. Indiana took them to 7 games, and it was close before Tyrese Achilles ruptured. So I don't think the Lakers need to go that far. I might be on the minority or in the minority there. And I don't know, like the Warriors have been pursuing or positioning themselves for Giannis for upwards of a decade, it feels like. And all the while, you know, you and I both know Andy and Sam and their show and their Twitter feeds. Like every time Giannis comes up, I can actually see both of those guys roll their eyes, you know, because they've been waiting for that for so long. And meanwhile, they've had Steph playing at this incredible level, and it feels like they've wasted Steph playing at that incredible level. And I don't want to look back on a year of LeBron and Luka, if LeBron is on the roster this year, and say, man, we really kind of wasted that year, especially if they don't get Giannis. But like, I don't want to look back on a year where they had both of those guys, especially LeBron coming off of an all-NBA season, and say, yeah, I don't know, I don't really believe in them. I that's just, it's hard for me to fathom looking at things that way. I just think they're both so bleeping good, especially if Luka is engaged enough. That dude looks ripped. He might have an ab visible this offseason. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, look, a lot's going to start with Luka and what shape that he's in. Did you hear LeBron on the Mind the Game pod kind of very loudly proclaiming that he doesn't give a crap about the regular season anymore?
I don't watch that show.
All right. I think it's worthwhile. And yeah. I think that him saying that and with his chest as he did, like, I think that if they wanted to get to kind of that, we win 4 more rounds than we won last year. Like, I don't like the, oh, we didn't have a center, and therefore that explains everything of, because really we only have 1 more center than we had last year. He's not the most reliable guy in the first place. And that wasn't the reason for everything to go. That wasn't the reason that everything did the way or went the way that it did. And so just I think that they have to like really, really commit to the season in ways that we're already not off onto that track. Like they seem to have different priorities between LeBron and the team. And I don't know, I just based off of what we saw last year, I think they're way behind athletically to a point where I agree that OKC is beatable. I don't think they're beatable by a team that can't run with them to any degree at all. Like I think the Lakers are amongst the least athletic teams in the league. And that I do think that there is a world where they can combine their brilliance together and really, but that requires, remember going into the 2020 season, the championship season, they had that like week before in Vegas where they had the players camp and it was very intense and everyone was like, yo, we got something here. Like if you approach the season like that, I do think they can do that. There's just nothing that indicates to me that that's kind of where LeBron's at this point. And then that's sort of the, and so, and when you combine that with just a lack of defensive talent, like, I don't know. I'm not as high on this duo and just kind of this group as maybe you are.
Yeah, that's a really good point that like, it seems that LeBron isn't even as high on this group as I am. Right. So
yeah,
that's fair. However, I don't know how much of that was created by the way that he feels like he's been treated so far this summer, where, I've said it on the show before, but essentially, you know, he and his team thought that they were going to get another 1-1 deal at or near the max with the no trade clause attached to it. And whether they, you know, specifically requested it or whatever, or the Lakers, you know, definitively told his team, no, you aren't going to get that. And like the path that we took to get there and the various tellings of the story don't matter. End of the day, I don't think he and the Lakers are on a very healthy place right now because he didn't get the deal that he wanted. And then on top of it, he doesn't feel like he's been as consulted on anything that the Lakers have been doing since they got Luka as he would like. And I think there are stances on both sides of that, parts of stances on both sides of that debate that I think, you know, are merit worthy. I don't know if there is a way to get LeBron back invested in this group. I would probably say landing Beal would probably go a long way in doing that. Because LeBron seems to, you know, he's a superstar and superstars think about superstars, right? And often to a fault. But I don't know. I don't see LeBron being on a different team at the beginning of the year.
I agree.
There's this talk that like Clutch may or may not be pushing for a buyout. The Lakers aren't going to buy out LeBron James. And there isn't a trade out there that he would accept on the market because he would go to probably a worse situation than he's in right now if that trade was executed. So it is kind of those situations where I find myself just looking at everybody involved and saying like, where's the adult in the room? Can you guys just get your shit together and like give this a go?
I don't see it like that. I don't think it's a matter of I think that for a very long time, their interests were aligned. And now the Lakers are looking to build around Luka, which is totally rational. LeBron doesn't have too much time left and wants to compete. That's totally rational. He's also somebody that, you know, Lakers have a lot of appreciation for I understand why he's like, hey, I chose to come here. I'd like a little bit of respect on the way out the door. And I think that that's something that Lakers want to grant him, you know, but yeah, man, I don't think it's a matter of like people being immature necessarily. It's just the dynamics have changed. In the past, LeBron has had that power with the team. Clutch has been the one because the Lakers are intentionally set up that whomever their superstar is, they sort of have a seat at the table in terms of how the roster is constructed, the direction of the franchise and all of that. And we've seen a growing relationship with Bill Duffy, Luka's agent and that agency and whatnot. And so that like there's somebody new at the table there that like, it's not aligned the same way that it was. And does LeBron have the right to feel a type of way about that? Absolutely. And I think that if The thing about the buyout is LeBron would have to push for it for sure. I think, you know, like you said,
yeah, Lakers have to go to the Lakers and specifically ask for it.
I also think that the Lakers owe it to LeBron that if he were to do that, like help LeBron get to the situation that he wants to get to if he wants to. I don't think it's going to end up like that. One thing to consider, though, is that if he gets bought out after the season starts, he is not eligible to sign with a team that's over the first apron, which describes a lot of the teams that he might want to go to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if he wanted to make a push for that, it would probably be soon over the course of this offseason.
If we haven't started to see the beginnings of that process already, right? People in the chat last night didn't like me mentioning this or making a bigger deal maybe out of it than I should have. I thought it was super weird that no, like JJ Redick wasn't in the stands last night. Rob wasn't shown on ESPN. I don't believe he was in the stands last night. LeBron wasn't in the stands last night. Like basically, like I obviously Luka's in Slovenia, so I'm going to give him a bit of a pass because I think he's there focusing on his conditioning and stuff like that. But that's I thought it was weird that like you look around, the Spurs had like Wemby and Harrison Barnes and De'Aaron Fox and their whole leadership group there to watch. By the way, Harper didn't even play, right? He didn't even play in their first game. The Mavs had everybody outside of like AD. I thought that was, you know, not AD not being there I don't care about that, but like Jason Kidd was there and Kyrie was there and they were there supporting Cooper Flagg. And you look around, and by the way, the Lakers are closer in proximity to Vegas than any of these other teams. So it's not like it's a crazy lift to get people there. What did you make of nobody being there? I thought it was weird.
I think it's indicative of just kind of the team being in transition and it being these kind of disparate parts right now that are in the process of rebuilding for the next era. Again, that's what I think that we could totally debate the merits of that and we will, but I think that is the sort of the, like where the Lakers are at, and it's where they've been in a lot of ways in the last couple of years. And you look around, look at the togetherness of OKC, right? The degree to which they are at each other's stuff and that they are, you know, they have that level of togetherness. And like I alluded to earlier, that's what the Lakers were like when they won the championship in 1920. And so all of that is just kind of signs of the same type of thing that, you know, that we're talking about. The Lakers are in transition.
I guess to be completely fair, it is weird that AD wasn't there. I'll change what I just said a second ago. That is a little weird. Like, you're the superstar there. Your team just traded Luka for you. Your number one overall pick is playing there. Being the leader of that team, you should probably have been there, AD. But yeah, I don't know. Let's debate the merits of the Giannis plan, the Jokic plan. And my concern with the Pete is that these other teams have a Luka plan. Like and you're trying to like and look, like you said, Luka has a seat at the table. They are running this plan by him. I don't think they would do anything that would put their relationship with Luka at risk. So that'll be the backdrop for this debate. Mm-hmm. That said, he's a competitor, right? And he just got his ass kicked by the team. He turned into a meme the year before. And he has his basketball hero on his roster in LeBron, and I would imagine is probably looking at this like, especially once the ball is tipped and the season is, you know, we hit go on the season, and I think he'll care a lot less about Giannis a summer or, you know, a season from then once the games actually get going. So that's where I'm a little nervous about it. I'm a little nervous about this plan of like, yeah, we'll position ourselves for Giannis. Because Steph has been, you know, okaying the pursuit of Giannis again for a decade in Golden State, and they haven't gotten him. Maybe Giannis is just super loyal, or Jokic is also potentially super loyal. And if you look at the end of the season and you get to that summer of 2026, and Giannis doesn't specifically say, yeah, I want to be a Laker, I want to go play with Luka, that makes me really, really nervous. You know, so what do you say to the notion of, you know, risking the now for the sake of the potential?
Yeah, no, that's obviously one of the unknown factors within this. I do think that obviously conversations are had with Luka, that I think that the Lakers' approach is they're moving forward with him on board with this plan, right? Like, you don't move forward with this sort of thing if it's communicated otherwise that it's not doable. But yeah, I think that their perspective is they needed a couple of transaction cycles to really completely rebuild the team, of which they were totally set up to do this upcoming summer because of all of the cap space. But, and so the Lakers feel like they have an organizational advantage in terms of the ability to retain stars and not be as scared as other teams are of trading the house for a guy that's going to be a free agent in 18 months, the way that they did with Luka. So yeah, it is somewhat an article of faith, right? Saying that they have consulted with Luka and Duffy and that everybody's on the same page and that they've greenlit it and all of that. And yeah, we'll see. I would argue that that's somewhat what LeBron's first year was with the Lakers, right? Mm-hmm. In when he signed in 2018, we didn't have AD yet, and it was this sort of team in transition, figuring out who's going to fit this.
Yeah, I remember like that sustainable winning was the message to that season. They don't want to push all their chips into the middle of the table, because if Lonzo or Ingram or any of those guys popped while you had LeBron, then your team would be better set up than if you traded all of them for a superstar.
And I think that's somewhat the framework of this season as well, with guys like Austin and Rui and all of the guys who are here, where who fits next to Luka when you have a training camp, when you've actually planned. It's not just like by the seat of your pants at the beginning of February, oh, we have Luka now, let's figure it out. But you actually have an offseason to plan around it and see who fits. That I think we'll have a much better idea by the deadline, by next summer, of like, hey, let's go. And so I think that's a big part of what this season is it's kind of tryouts in some way of who's going to fit long term.
It's funny that there's a on-court tryout. I think there's a bit of a front office tryout for Mark Walter, you know, and those guys who are paying attention to it too. It's an interesting thing that's going on simultaneously. Something I was thinking about, though, especially as it pertains to Giannis or Jokic or you know, whoever the Lakers would look to add here. If you look at the types of trades that have gone down with those players, it hasn't been, you know, and also it hasn't been those teams sending those players to their selected destination, their reported preferred destination. Dame didn't go to Miami. Paul George, originally when he was traded from Indiana, didn't go to the Lakers, though you and I think disagree on whether he wanted to or not. And I don't know. My take on it is that billionaires don't like being told what to do by their employees.
Sure.
So when
not get strong-armed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pay me all my money and like, send me the guy, a place I want to go. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Like a billionaire is going to, you know, just signed Jokic to a potential contract worth $80-ish million a season. And then if he turns around and tells Kroenke, hey, send me to the Lakers now, I don't know if Kroenke would necessarily be all interested in that. Mm-hmm. As for, you know, same goes for Giannis and Milwaukee. I think what you said a second ago was true about, like, I think the Lakers would owe it to LeBron if he specifically asked for a buyout to give him that buyout. And I think those teams would owe it to those players, especially Jokic and Giannis, who brought championships to those cities. Those cities or those teams would owe it to those players to send them to wherever they go. That just hasn't been how it's gone. And then also, if like the hope is, you know, trading for that player into cap space and not sending, you know, as much as maybe another team would line up to trade for that player, I think that also puts the plan at risk. To me, I think the best approach to landing those players is to actually employ as many good basketball players as the Lakers can on good contracts that team would then trade for. Because whenever all of these guys get traded, the owner always releases the statement, we aren't tanking, we're trying to win right away. Sure, we'll show you, you son of a bee. Like it's always really cute. And then reality sets in and they're like, okay, yeah. But that to me is, if I was going to build out a Giannis plan, I wouldn't mind trading for Wiggins on what would be a $30 million expiring contract that you could use to match salaries for Giannis if Giannis did ask to go to the Lakers.
Well, you don't actually have to match salary with Giannis.
No, I know. I'm like whatever I would need to use. If I don't think the Lakers can't open up, especially if like Ayton plays well. I don't know if they'll have $70 million in cap space? I don't know. But they, but
yeah, no, they're positioned to be able to absorb.
Even like, after Austin's deal and even after. Well,
not, that's the thing is that Austin can be a piece in this. There's a few different routes to it. But I would say that if there is an imbalance between what the Lakers send out versus Giannis coming in, and Giannis is set to make, I believe, $62 million next year, which is difficult to trade for, even if you really want to. If there's that imbalance, that's going to generate a massive trade exception, which probably has a lot more value to a team like Milwaukee, especially in this new CBA, where like being able, a lot of teams are going to be looking for flexibility to be able to get out of money. And the problem with trading for Wiggins is not that you can't trade him again, but you'd actually need to trade him to somebody who could absorb his contract, like Brooklyn was this year. And that's going to cost you money. It costs you money to do that for like a $10 million player. So to do that for a $30 million type of player, like that's bad money to Milwaukee. Like they have no, Andrew Wiggins serves no purpose for them in a post Giannis type of future. And with respect to the quote unquote Giannis plan in the first place, anyway, it's not just a matter of, it's not just like a, oh, we're going to strong arm this other team into dealing with us and only us, and you must send him to LA. It's also like being able to put the best offer available on the table. And I think that come this summer, the Lakers will have the 26, 31, and 33 picks that are tradable. You know, ideally a guy like Adu Thiro hits, you know, you've got more minor pieces in Dalton and Laravia that can be added onto the deal. You can have Austin in a sign and trade possibly as well, where it's more about like both Giannis wanting to come here and having one of the best trade packages on the market. And one of the things that I think people don't realize when you look at the Lakers assets, it's like, how could the Lakers possibly have the best offer available for Giannis? What scares off a lot of teams is if like Giannis doesn't want to stay there, if he's a free agent in a year, and you've got to come close to the $62 million in salary, if you don't have that cap space, right? You got to send out like two of your best players, picks, you know what I'm saying? To be able to, and a lot of teams aren't going to do that in if they don't feel like Giannis is going to come back.
But we've seen teams make that risk though, or make that gamble. OKC, right? With Paul George and
Kawhi.
Toronto with Kawhi and they won a championship that way. So like those teams that have, you know, gambled that way it's paid off. So I actually think teams might gamble. The other part of it too, Pete, is that like you look at the champions in recent years, and obviously, you know, the recent past doesn't always tell the future, but there aren't too many like super teams that went out and won a championship after it was assembled. Brooklyn didn't win a championship. Like most of the teams that are winning championships right now are mostly, you know, homegrown, you know, to use that cliche. And like if the Lakers do trade for Giannis and it takes all of everything that it would trade for Giannis, now you have bare bones assets to build around him and Luka, and Giannis would be 33, I believe, at that time, or 32 or 33. I'm not sitting here saying don't go for Giannis, but I'm choosing between giving it a more real go at it now, while you have LeBron still playing at a high level and Luka's probably going to be playing at a pretty good level next year, and surrounding them with the best team, even if it puts your future pursuit of Giannis somewhat at risk. I would rather do that than hold out hope that maybe all of these things fall in the same way. And that's what I keep on coming back to.
It's funny. The holding out hope that maybe, just maybe, to me applies way more to like, can this year's team be a contender than it does to, because we're calling it the Giannis plan for the sake of expediency. And that's definitely plan A. But the whole idea more broadly, say they don't get Giannis. It's that we've got Luka, we've got the cap hold on Austin's contract, which is not going to be super high. And this is an opportunity to actually build a team that's conceived around Luka, what he does well, what he does poorly, the type of teammates that he needs, that it can look a bunch of different. And there's a bunch of different guys kind of coming up for free agency there that, you know, whether it's you're moving for them in trades or you are signing guys. I do think that there is. I do think that's something that is. There's more pliability within that plan.
Like Giannis is the headline.
But yeah, Giannis is plan A, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's true. And look, like, again, I wouldn't trade a first for Wiggins. But if Miami came to me and said, you know, whatever expirings it would take for you to take Wiggins off our hands, and you don't have to move the first round pick, and you don't have to do all of this stuff, and I would then get the starting small forward that the Lakers desperately need. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden I'm entering a season, especially if I don't know if it can work contractually. I think it can. But if the Lakers could keep Rui out of that trade and it's just the garbage expirings that the Lakers have, I guess Miami really likes Gabe. They're like the only team in the league that really, really wants Gabe. Mm-hmm. Funny how that works. But like if that's what it took to get him and I'm able to keep Rui and Rui could solidify the bench in this world. And I use my biannual to go out and get like a Marcus Smart to also help with some of the defensive toughness that the Lakers are kind of lacking. Although, man, Smart makes me a little nervous. The more that I say Smart's name, he looks super duper washed when he wasn't hurt the last couple of years. But still, like buyout X, you know, in with the biannual. And there is no perfect route here, you know, and I'm not even sitting here saying again that I am absolutely opposed to employing Giannis and having him with Luka. Like, I want to make sure nobody aggregate me saying like Anthony Irwin is anti-Giannis. That is not me at all. But I don't know, man, like the offensive creativity that we could see from Luka or from Luka and LeBron together. If LeBron ever does buy in, or if the Lakers do trade LeBron to say like a Dallas or something like that, even though I think it's between New York and Cleveland, if he was to leave.
And it'd have to be expiring money, Anthony. That's the other thing. LeBron makes a lot of money. And again, it'd have to contour to this Lakers plan. If they were to trade him, they're not going to take back contracts that last past this season.
Yeah. Well, if you're trading LeBron, then you're definitely in on the quote-unquote Giannis plan, mm-hmm. right? Like that I would agree with you on. But so long as LeBron is on the team and so long as Luka's on the team, and if there's a world in which those guys buy in, I am more confident in that world than pushing this out a season from now. Because the other part of it too, Pete, is that like I feel like we've been doing a version of this with LeBron and AD too, where it was always like I have felt for the last few years that I never thought the Lakers went fully all in since they traded for Russ, basically. After the Russ trade, I thought they always kind of built with one arm kind of tied behind their back, and they were kind of reluctant to always go all in to the extent that they needed to with
LeBron
and AD. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we wasted some really good LeBron years as a result of it. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to waste another one, you know? And my question too, to the Lakers would be, let's say it's not LeBron, or even to Lakers fans, let's say it's not LeBron. And let's say it's Kobe coming off of an all NBA season. And he's paired with that era's version of Luka. Is there a world in which the Lakers don't go all in to try to get Kobe one more championship? Like, that's crazy to me. Huh?
After his injury?
Well, no, before his injury, because LeBron hasn't had that injury. Sure. So before that injury, after his injury, it was like, you know, let him have his farewell tour, tank, and get ready for the future. I understood that. Mm-hmm. But before his injury, you know, let's say, you know, we're in the era of multiverses in our movies nowadays. So in some different universe, you swap out LeBron for the Kobe equivalent when he's coming off of an all NBA season. And would any Lakers fan be arguing for the future rather than pursuing Kobe's sixth championship?
It's hard to make the comparison because, again, Kobe went from like a top three guy in the NBA in 2013, right before the Achilles injury, to it being over in terms of him being a high-end type of player. That it's with LeBron, you have to make a little more of a calculation there of like kind of where is he at and can we get there? Like,
but he was a top six player last year. So you're talking about like a top three versus a top six player.
I don't know. I think we have different opinions on what his impact was this past season and kind of one of the things is that like the team's habits are like, this is something I talked about a lot through the season. I thought they really reared their ugly head throughout the postseason in that like, at his age, with his mileage, he's just trying to get through the regular season. I totally get his mentality about the regular season, and that ideally we have, and this is the version of this season that really works out. LeBron is needed, and what he needed from AD, and it didn't work out this way, was that second star to really just be absolutely dominant and take over and carry the regular season in a way that Luka has totally done for teams in the past. That then allows LeBron to ramp it up. Cause after game one, I thought LeBron was superb in that first round series. But I don't think the Lakers had built up the habits over the course of the season that you really have to take the regular season seriously and really go for it in ways that like, you're not going to win if you don't do that. That to what degree can LeBron do that at this point? That, and it's not just him, right? Like we don't have defensive talent on the team, you know? So like we're far enough away to, you know, if they can sneak, if they can find a whatever the defensive equivalent is of the Ayton deal, where you get like, hey, we got a starting center for $8.3 million. That's great. Like, if you can find a couple moves like that, I can be moved off of that. But like, I don't know, man. I feel like we're far enough away to where it's not worth it.
That's man. Yeah. Maybe this is why I suck at gambling. And like,
well, and the thing is, too, Anthony, is like everybody's right not to trust like. Oh, and it's all going to work out in 18 months. And we're either going to get Giannis or it's going to be something else that's good. And Rob's going to build this great team. I don't know that. I don't have faith in that. You know, I'm just saying that I do think that it's rational to kind of line things up for Giannis, because I do think that if you're starting with Giannis and Luka, like, yeah, most teams have kind of younger players on rookie, the Shays and Tatums and these guys that have kind of just come off their rookie deals, leading them to championships. But like, that's a real good start, man. That's, you know, Lakers are in the mix at that point. And so I think it's a rational decision to kind of line things up that way.
What specifically is it then that you're worried about with LeBron, that like you're seeing his season differently than I did? Because like, I think the reps part of it is absolutely true, that like, I don't think the Lakers will try hard, or he will try hard enough over the course of the regular season to get the reps that the Lakers will need to have the habits in the postseason. I think that's fair, but like, what role if Luka, because I think Luka is capable of an MVP season this year, right? I think we would agree there. Mm-hmm. So if Luka is capable of an MVP season, and I'm probably the highest on Ayton of just about anybody that I've spoken to, because I am cynical and believe that this guy is going to do everything he can to keep getting eight-figure checks to play basketball moving forward. So I really do believe that Ayton is in for a really good season as well, mm-hmm. as long as he stays healthy. Austin is in a contract year, and I think we're probably in for a pretty good Austin season too. He's been hearing his name, and I know his agency hasn't particularly loved, I would imagine, how many Austin Reeves trade rumors there have been all year. So I think Austin is probably in for a pretty good season if they, you know, I don't know. Like, LeBron is now getting questioned by his own team, and has been questioned by his own team for like half of a decade. They're just waiting for LeBron to get so old that, see, we were right. We shouldn't have traded everything that we needed to with you. Mm-hmm. I think that there's the makings of like, there's no world where the Lakers are going to be the favorite to win a championship this year. Mm-hmm. None whatsoever. Can they be a tier one team in the conference? Also, probably not. Probably not. But can they viably, like, can they be the favorite in the first round of the playoffs and then have like even odds in their second round and then need for something to go right in the conference finals? And then I think they would be favored because the East sucks in the finals if they do get there. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that path, if they do land the right talent, and if it kind of reminds me, like the way that we're talking about LeBron right now kind of reminds me of the Kobe trade demand year, where it was like, you know, I think there's a world where you start the season, you're asking LeBron, like, how in on this team are you? Do you like what you see? Do you like what you see? Do you like what you see? And then at some point, remember Bynum had like a really good game against the Seattle Sonics, and they asked Kobe about like what he thought of the team and if he still maintained his trade demand. And he was like, why would I want a trade away from this? Look at how good we're playing. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm Disney pilled because I have kids now, but I could see that world. Like, I just really believe in Luka, and I really believe in the LeBron that we saw, especially in the playoffs last year after game one. And I do actually have more confidence in this year going well than I do in this front office building around Luka, given what we've seen from them not building around AD and LeBron. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it always just kind of comes down to, is I trust LeBron and his basketball talent a lot more than I trust this front office and their abilities without LeBron.
I think that's totally fair. And I think that when you look at each piece individually, there are plenty of reasons for guys, Luka and Austin, Ayton, all to have great years. I think that when you look at the team collectively, they're so behind in defensive talent and athleticism that I don't think there is that Disney ending unless you really address, like, if you can really increase the defense and athleticism on the team, I'm open to it. But I think that's sort of a collective weakness of Luka, LeBron, and Austin as a collective trio. Is it, you know, your best athlete there by far is LeBron, who's the oldest player in the league with more mileage than any player in NBA history. That I just think that we saw come playoff time, the degree to which that ability to go possession. Like, I think we could compete for 50 games again and be right there in the seeding mix that we were. But I also think that some truth got exposed in the playoffs that goes beyond just like a Jackson Hayes was bad and we had nobody else.
Yeah. They need to get deeper. That's, you know, and it might not even be like a superstar problem, that like maybe there's no world in which they have guys 7 through 10 that I trust enough to play in playoff series. Cause apparently that's what you need nowadays, is you need that kind of depth and trust in that depth to have those guys on any given night. Your number 9 guy steps up and has a Kayson Wallace like shooting spree, you know? So that's fair. You know, what's weird, Pete? It's weird to be the optimistic, like the optimistic one between the two of us. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do with my hands. That's why I'm holding a pencil. Let's talk really quickly about the LeBron era, because it is clearly kind of coming to an end here. Mm-hmm. One way or another, right? Whether it's retirement soon or buyout or trade, whatever. How are you going to look back on the LeBron era if this is indeed, you know, rounding third and heading home?
So for LeBron himself, I have the utmost respect for him as somebody who got to spend a little bit of time around him while working with the team. And I pulled a lot of value. This is a personal side thing, but I put a lot of value in how people treat people that they don't have to treat kindly or well, right? Yeah. Of which, when you're LeBron James, there are a lot of people that you could probably just shit on if you wanted to and you'd get away with it. He's somebody that just treats people well, that I think that he came to the Lakers at a time where we really needed a stabilizing force and somebody that you could really build around. He always talks about how I have broad shoulders for a reason, that I will forever be grateful to him for making the choice that he did and for leading the team to the championship in 2020 and just all of the stabilizing force that he's been over the course of several years. You know, looking at it from a team perspective, it's super bittersweet because once they put a team around him, they won the title immediately, and then they tried something different the next year with Mark Gasol at the five, and then halfway through they were like, oh, we want to go back to the two big thing. But there was this tension between like the front office and the way Vogel wanted to play and the two big lineups, of which we're seeing sort of like the 2020 Lakers being reborn in Dallas in a lot of ways. You see all the people they're hiring and all the
literally,
right? Like there's, and that's what's bittersweet about it, is that like they took it in a whole, I thought the implementation of like 80 at the five was very poorly executed.
Yeah.
That like, when I look back at the LeBron era, I feel like the 21 and even the 22 seasons, obviously the Russ trade is the headline there, but like LeBron and AD didn't play three consecutive games together more than once in the 21-22 season. So I feel like 21 and 22 kind of got taken out by injuries. And then they trade Russ at the 23 deadline, make the 23 Western Conference Finals run. And then I feel like they were content staying there rather than trying to go get one more. And I feel like they kind of like gave up on the LeBron AD as a championship combo a little bit earlier. Now I'm at that point, right, with, in terms of like, we need to move on to building around Luka. But yeah, when I look back at the LeBron era, there's like a super grateful for him. 2020 was amazing. They had a title caliber roster the next year, and then they completely freaking blew it up, and that's always going to stink.
Yeah, it's really cool to hear that about LeBron the person. I obviously, you know, been covering this team from Texas, so I don't have the same like on hand experience with him. The part of it that, yeah, is it's always going to hurt. I'm the kind of guy who like hates regret. Like I have, there, Jen will catch me from time to time just shaking my head, and she'll ask what's up. And I'll literally be reliving a conversation where I should have said something different, or I did something dumb or whatever. And it just jumps to my mind, and I think about it, and it just like annoys me that I did whatever it was that I did. And I don't know. I feel like the Lakers, yeah, like you put it really well, gave up on LeBron and AD far too soon. And what is like the best evidence of that to me is whenever they did have even somewhat serious teams around them, like that year that they got to the Western Conference Finals, they got to the fucking Western Conference Finals.
Both playoff risers, man. Like it was the regular season that they took too much out of, man, where it was like you had guys that were really going to step up once the playoffs started.
Yeah. And like when they got LeBron and AD, I said at the time that has the chance to be one of like maybe the most talented tandem ever. Because I thought not only were they both really, really good in their own right, but I think you and I recorded a show about this when I made this point. But I thought that the two like compounded each other's strengths, and they could actually be used side by side on stuff. And I'm always going to feel that way. Like there's nothing from their time together that would ever make me feel differently about that. Like I think they're going to probably be one of the more underrated duos ever in basketball history. And the reason that they're going to go down as underrated is because the Lakers didn't fully believe in them. And that's just, that runs so against what I think of the Lakers and especially the people. Like if Rob was hired to be kind of like the Kobe mama mentality stand-in, Kobe would empty the clip on stuff. Right. Like that's the thing that we respected the most about Kobe was the fact that he shot 26 times in that finals game seven, because he was like, if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down shooting. I'm going to go down swinging. If I think I have a chance, I'm going to keep on fucking shooting. And I thought that the Lakers with LeBron and with AD far too quickly just said like, nah, we don't have the chance. And it's kind of a bummer.
The flip side to that is when you do put everything all in and you do go down swinging, you end up in positions like Milwaukee or Phoenix or the Clippers, where you don't own any of your draft for the rest of the decade. Your cap sheet's a bit of a mess. You know what I'm saying? Like you're
hoping Bradley Beal takes $14 million less so you can
so you can win 50 games and be the four seed or five seed. You know what I'm saying? That the Lakers are, I don't want to be stuck on that treadmill either. That I, there is benefit to a level of discretion. They gave up on that duo, and these my words at least, earlier than they should have. But I do think that there is benefit to not like going all in and then all in again and then all in again. You find yourself in a bad spot for a few years if you do.
Yeah, we aren't going to have the downturn, and it's good that, you know, while they employ Luka, they aren't going to be like, they won't have to tank, right? They just like Phoenix just signed Devin Booker to the 2-year, $150 million deal. And they like have to tank while he's making that amount of money. Now it helps to tank when Devin Booker is making that amount of money, but still like you're basically paying Devin Booker to stick around while you tank. And during his prime. And I think that's kind of a tough look, but, all right, man. Well, this has been fun.
Not the last time we're going to talk about this. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure that we're probably going to come back to this as especially like we always hear more about what the Lakers could or couldn't have done after the fact. And I think after the season has kind of played out, the stuff that we're going to hear about, like which players the Lakers maybe could have gotten, but didn't because they wanted to maintain that flexibility. Whenever we learn more about that stuff, I want to have this conversation again, because that would allow us then the context of being like, all right, what would a team with X, Y, and Z have been capable of?
Sure.
And right now it's all hypothetical. So we're kind of having a partial version of that conversation, but you guys know Pete from LFR. He's, you know, one of my absolute favorite dudes. Happy that you're healthy, man. You sent me the text. You're like, this is the most serious medical thing I've had since I was in the hospital. And I was like, shit, I remember you being in the hospital.
Yeah, that was no fun.
So I'm glad that you're feeling better, man. Anything that you want to plug before we get you out of here?
No, actually, I just want to make a final point kind of on this topic, is that if you've paid attention to the Lakers for any length of time, like if Giannis is going to be available, the Lakers doing what they can to go after him is the most Lakersy thing ever. You know what I mean? Like there's it being that shouldn't even be breaking news or anything like that. And it's always funny to me. Like I saw a couple comments in there, like, oh, Lakers fans are delusional if they think they can trade for him. And like, it doesn't matter how many fucking times like this happens. It just happened in February. We just got Luka Doncic, of which anybody Laker fan would be delusional to think they could trade for. So I'm not saying that the Lakers are going to land Giannis. They're the favorites or things like that. I'm telling you, the Lakers are absolutely gonna, if Giannis freaking Antetokounmpo is available, Lakers are absolutely going to try to go after him, and rightfully so.
Yeah. Let's just hope he's available.
Let's hope.
Right. Let's hope he makes himself available. I think that's another thing too that I'm a little nervous about here, is I think we're assigning we're assuming some stuff about a class of player that I don't know if I'm necessarily comfortable assuming, because the prior generation of player would be available. I don't know for sure that Giannis is going to make himself available.
Did you see the iShow speed? Did you see him on?
Yeah, that was funny. I laughed at that. You're going to be in Milwaukee? Yeah, probably. Hey, look over there.
That's what I'm saying. Generational hater fucking cracking me up. The dumbass happens right in front of him in February. Oh, that was the most insane trade of all time. That can't possibly happen again. Look at the cover of my fucking podcast, dumbass. This happens late. It's been happening for the Lakers the last 60 years. I'm not saying we're going to land Giannis, but if you think it's delusional the Lakers could get Giannis, you are absolutely.
I'm not going to go that far. I'm not going to say they definitely can't, because the Lakers have proven that point wrong time and time and time again. I love that his thing is generational hater. Like it's so perfect. It's like, so like the comments are perfectly on brand. I did get a super comment, Pete, before you head out of here. BG the kid wanted to know, Pete, when are you starting up the non-basketball pod?
Probably in August.
That's a good time to do that kind of stuff. Pete, thank you very much. I'm going to stick around and answer some of the super comments and actual comments. But Pete, thank you very much for hopping on and making yourself available. Happy that you're feeling better, and we'll talk soon, man.
You got it, man. Generational hater, you're dumb as shit. Peace.
Oh man. I just love that the at is generational hater. That's the part of it that I just am cracking up over. Let me play this really quick and then dive into the. Fuck Washington! First one here is Logan Misiak. If LeBron stays or goes, this is Luka's team now. Nobody is debating that. Nobody whatsoever is. I am not here saying that, you know, Luka is here. Therefore, they still need to weigh LeBron in the same way that he did before Luka got here. I'm not saying that. Although I do think they've been a little quick to just kind of ignore LeBron altogether. That I'm not necessarily comfortable with because of how much he's meant to the Lakers. But yeah, I don't love how kind of ugly this is ending between LeBron and the Lakers, but we'll see. Look, it's like I just said a second ago, after LeBron is gone, we're going to have conversations about what actually went down and who actually feels what way and all of that stuff. That stuff is kind of hard to unearth in the moment because people are still feeling those things. So, but for right now, yeah, I don't necessarily love the path that the LeBron and Laker relationship is on as it comes to its close. So on that note, I am going to go ahead. Let me just see here really quick and dive into, I just want to make sure that I didn't miss any super comments before. Cool. I did not. Everybody, please do hit that subscribe button. Please hit that like button. I'm going to take this down, obviously, and then put it right back up onto the RSS feed ASAP, and then get ready for Vegas. If you guys are there in Vegas and you guys see me wandering around, hit me up if you guys want. I love talking to you guys. You guys make the way that I get to live possible. So if y'all want anything, I'll buy you a beer, whatever, and I will. If I see you there, I see you there. If you hear from me, you'll hear from me. And until then, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. And I will talk to you. Might be 15 minutes from now. Who knows?